conversion of muscle protein to blood sugar. Gluconeogenesis can occur during periods of starvation or excessive exercise. During the first 24 hours of fasting, glycogen in the liver is utilized, and then the body will begin using up muscle proteins. Glucagon secretion is stimulated by hypoglycemia, fasting, and also by the ingestion of a protein-rich meal. Individuals can survive without glucagon, as in cases where the pancreas, which is the only known source of glucagon and insulin, is removed. A person must have insulin to survive, and this can be accomplished through insulin injections. Of course, removing the pancreas causes diabetes, often with wide swings in the blood sugar levels. Insulin given by injections is not as efficient in providing a continuous supply in exactly the right amount as is the pancreas. After a person eats carbohydrates, the digestive enzymes break down the food. The blood in the intestines, having absorbed these simplified food substances, now has an elevated glucose level. This stimulates the release of insulin. As we have previously learned, insulin causes the storage of fat. When the blood sugar level falls too low, glucagon is secreted, which mobilizes stored fat into glucose, which raises blood sugar back to its normal level. Glucose is the major stimulus for insulin secretion. Fructose, a sugar from fruits, and amino acids, proteins from meats, cause a significant release of insulin only in the presence of previously elevated blood sugar. The overweight person probably has increased insulin production because of excessive stimulation of the pancreas through overeating and the development of, or genetic tendency toward, insulin resistance. The increased insulin level then promotes the storage of sugar as glycogen in both the liver and muscle. After proteins and fats are ingested, insulin promotes the storage of protein in muscle and fat in fat cells as triglycerides. Insulin also prevents the breakdown of glycogen and triglycerides, fat. No wonder it is difficult to lose weight in the presence of elevated insulin levels. Scientific literature documents that even low levels of circulating insulin inhibit fat breakdown. The metabolic pathways involving insulin are exquisitely sensitive in causing the storage of fat and inhibiting its breakdown for use by the body. Insulin further activates an enzyme, lipoprotein lipase. Enzymes are proteins that speed up metabolic actions, which promotes the removal of triglycerides from the bloodstream and their deposition in fat cells. Insulin also inhibits hormone-sensitive lipase, another enzyme that breaks down stored fats. The net result of these two activities is an increase in stored fat that results in weight gain and an increase of abdominal girth. Also adding to fat storage is the conversion of some of the sugar present in the blood. A percentage of the blood sugar is taken up by fat cells and, under the influence of our old friend insulin, is converted to still more fat. For our scientific listeners, this involves glycerol-3-phosphate and free fatty acids. Insulin is a major deterrent to fat breakdown and a major facilitator of fat storage. Insulin resistance is a condition of decreased responsiveness to insulin, wherein the fat cells, liver cells, and muscle cells have become insensitive to normal levels of circulating insulin. Usually, a small burst of insulin will lower blood sugar. However, in an insulin-resistant individual, this does not occur, and more insulin is required to do the job. Obesity is the most common result of insulin resistance. Another frequently seen result of insulin resistance is type 2 diabetes, non-insulin-dependent diabetes. In most type 2 diabetics, the circulating insulin levels and blood sugars are elevated, as are the blood cholesterol levels. Obese individuals without diabetes usually have elevated insulin levels with normal blood sugar levels. Unfortunately, The obese person with an elevated insulin level is probably on his way to developing diabetes. The pancreas may simply become exhausted from constant stimulation by glucose, sugar, and finally fail, resulting in diabetes. Diabetes is discussed specifically in Chapter 13. Insulin promotes the storage of all food groups: glucose, carbohydrates, amino acids, proteins, and triglycerides, fats. These stored foods are available for use as an energy source later in a fasting state or simply between meals. The fall in insulin levels during fasting allows the breakdown of stored fat and stored sugar, glycogen. Fats and glycogen are then used as energy sources between meals. As mentioned, obese people have elevated insulin levels in both the fasting and fed states. Lipoprotein lipase levels also are elevated in the obese. The enzyme lipoprotein lipase is important in the storage of fat. You now can understand that obese individuals are metabolically ready at all times to store whatever they eat. Again, it is no wonder that the obese person with an elevated insulin level has a hard time losing weight. But think of the benefits of a diet for this very same person that requires the presence of very little insulin in the system. We are now gaining on the answer to how to lose weight and improve our blood chemistry at the same time. Syndrome X, described by Dr. G.M. Reaven, is a combination of two or more of the following conditions: insulin resistance with resulting elevated insulin levels, elevated lipids, especially triglycerides, obesity, coronary artery disease, and hypertension. Insulin resistance probably is the most important part of this syndrome because, in fact, it often causes the other problems to occur. A significant number of patients with Syndrome X develop coronary artery disease and experience an increased number of fatal heart attacks. How about some good news? 50% or more of insulin resistance can be reduced or even reversed, as insulin resistance does not totally depend on our inherited genes. How can we decrease insulin levels or reduce insulin resistance? You are right. It is the Sugar Buster's way of eating. First, we must eat less of the particularly insulin-stimulating carbohydrates, high glycemic carbohydrates. This helps with weight loss and, combined with exercise and smoking cessation, provides major non-medical ways to accomplish this reduction of circulating insulin. Therefore, by lowering the insulin levels and decreasing insulin resistance, the incidence of obesity and probably the progression of heart disease will decrease. Many people with coronary artery disease have similar body shapes. They are fatter in the abdomen, have beer bellies, and are thinner in the hips and buttocks. This is called central obesity, apple shape. Individuals with diabetes and insulin resistance have similar apple shapes as opposed to pear shapes, where the fat is distributed in the hips and buttocks. Dr. Wohlever and co-workers in 1992 studied the benefits of a low glycemic index diet in overweight, non-insulin-dependent diabetics. They found a 7% drop in cholesterol after only 6 weeks. Dr. Jenkins studied a low-glycemic, low-sugar diet fed to normal males. After 2 weeks, the men's cholesterol dropped an average of 15%, and insulin secretion dropped an amazing 32%. After ingestion of 50 to 100 grams of glucose during a high-sugar meal, insulin levels usually become very elevated and can remain elevated for several hours. Eating high-carbohydrate, high-glycemic meals 3 times a day and at bedtime can cause insulin to be elevated for 18 out of 24 hours. The pancreas needs a rest, and so do fat cells. Imagine insulin pushing fat into cells 18 hours a day. Only a few hours a day would be left for fat breakdown and fat loss. Fat would tend to accumulate at essentially all other times, resulting in you-know-what going you-know-where. Understanding insulin and metabolism will now enable us to follow a healthier diet. As mentioned, not all carbohydrates are equal in their ability to stimulate insulin release. Carbohydrates that stimulate the most insulin secretion are called high glycemic carbohydrates. Conversely, low glycemic carbohydrates do not stimulate as much insulin secretion. In 1981, Dr. David Jenkins published an article on the glycemic indexes of foods in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. He and others have since provided many additional measurements on the glycemic indexes of many common carbohydrates. Because you have learned the need to dodge the carbohydrates with the high glycemic indexes, you can see why we provided you with some additional glycemic index information. Figure 3 on your PDF companion lists the glycemic indexes for many of our most commonly consumed carbohydrates. Chapter 9, The Sugar Busters Concept. Sugar Busters is a nutritional lifestyle, not just another fad diet. It is about how, what, and when to eat, and yes, it does involve exercise. You will find Sugar Busters logical, practical, and reasonable, and you will not be burdened by having to weigh, count, and measure. Because we encourage you to avoid refined sugar and processed grain products, Sugar Busters will be a less-sugar diet, but definitely not a no-sugar diet. In fact, we strongly encourage you to make a commitment to choosing correct carbohydrates, those low-insulin-producing carbohydrates. Insulin causes you to convert and store excess sugar as fat, and also store excess fat as fat. You cannot live without insulin, but you can live much better without too much insulin. Remember, most of the fat on your body comes from sugar, not fat. Modulating insulin secretion is the key to our Sugar Busters diet. Successfully controlling insulin through nutrition will allow you to improve your performance and health through nutrition. To control insulin, you must control the intake of sugar, both the refined variety and the kind so abundant and stimulative in many carbohydrates. We recommend selecting foods in forms that stimulate insulin secretion in a more deliberate, controlled manner rather than those that cause the immediate outpouring of this hormone. Eating in this way will result in lower average insulin levels in our blood throughout any given period. This, in turn, has a markedly beneficial effect on reducing fat synthesis and storage, as well as curbing the harmful effects that too much insulin has on the cardiovascular system. Because insulin is the key to our concept, carbohydrates become the cornerstone. The basic building block of all carbohydrates is sugar. Sugar, absorbed from our digestive tract into our blood, then stimulates insulin secretion to assist in the transport of sugar into cells as an energy source. The type of the ingested carbohydrate ultimately affects the rate of sugar absorption and, therefore, insulin secretion. Refined sugar and processed grain products, stripped of their coatings or husks, are almost immediately absorbed in a very concentrated fashion, resulting in rapid rise in blood sugar, followed by secretion of large quantities of insulin. This is the case with most candies, cookies, cakes, pies, and pastries. A diet of refined sugar and processed grain products, therefore, produces a rather marked elevation in average insulin levels throughout a 24-hour period. The additional insulin is then available to promote fat deposition, as well as many other previously discussed undesirable effects. However, carbohydrates in an unrefined form, such as fruits, green vegetables, dried beans, and whole grains, require further digestion alteration before absorption. This, in turn, causes a proportionate reduction in the rate and quantity of insulin secretion, a modulation of insulin secretion. The end result is lower average insulin levels and less fat synthesis, storage, and weight gain, as well as fat breakdown. The positive effects on our appearance and cardiovascular system become apparent. The Sugar Busters lifestyle involves eating high-fiber vegetables and whole grains. The fiber in both of these food products has a beneficial effect on your digestive process and overall health. Fruits are encouraged on Sugar Busters and are excellent as snacks. Meats are an important source of protein, but should be lean and trimmed. Sugar Busters is cautious about fat. We encourage reduced fat products when choosing milk and cheese, and strongly advocate careful attention to saturated fats. Too much saturated fat and trans fats, those oils used in fast food establishments, are very harmful not only to your waistline, but also to your heart and blood vessels. Hydration is important, and everyone is encouraged to drink 6 to 8 glasses of water daily. Missing meals is not healthy. It is important to eat 3 regular meals daily, and appropriate snacks are allowed. But moderation in portion size is also important. If you are not careful, you easily can eat too much of even a correct food choice. Late-night snacking is not allowed. Eating at night before going to bed only raises your insulin level and encourages cholesterol production, since most cholesterol is manufactured while you are sleeping. Exercise is an important part of any successful nutritional lifestyle. You should strive to exercise at least 20 minutes 4 days per week so that you will raise your resting heart rate. However, most people are overambitious about exercise, and when they do not meet their expectations, they just don't do it at all. They literally bite off more exercise than they can chew. Perform. A little exercise will go a long way, and a little certainly is better than none at all. Refer to Chapter 17. Sugar Busters is not restrictive. You can eat from all food groups, but we encourage you to make the best selections within each food group. Sugar Busters is not an extreme or radical approach to nutrition, but rather the voice of moderation. A great plan not followed yields poor results. Sugar Busters has been developed to encourage compliance rather than cheating. The closer you follow Sugar Busters, the better your results. Likewise, lean meats are important to our nutritional well-being. Not only do they supply much-needed protein, the building blocks of our bodies, but also ingested protein stimulates glucagon secretion. Glucagon, also from the pancreas, promotes the breakdown of stored fat, creating a fat loss for our bodies. The picture should now become clear. A diet concept based on low glycemic carbohydrates, high fiber vegetables, fruits, and whole grains with their fiber, lean meats, and fats in moderation, biochemically modulates the insulin-glucagon relationship. This will result in overall body fat loss and a reduction of the adverse effects of insulin on our cardiovascular system. Alcohol in reasonable amounts may be beneficial. Alcohol increases the HDL, or good cholesterol component, both HDL2 and HDL3, decreases plasma fibrinogen, and decreases platelet stickiness and aggregation. These actions all tend to reduce the development of arteriosclerosis and are derived from all forms of alcohol. However, red wine appears to be more beneficial than other forms of alcohol. Grape skins and seeds, which are involved in processing red wines, contain a variety of bioflavonoids called vitamin P that further decrease platelet adhesiveness and also interfere with the oxygenation of LDL cholesterol. It is the oxidized form of LDL cholesterol that is detrimental to our cardiovascular systems. The curve for the relationship between alcohol consumption and mortality is U-shaped and is shown in Figure 8 on your PDF companion. In moderation, there is a potential benefit to our cardiovascular system, but in excess, the curve changes quickly to the detriment of the consumer. Therefore, responsible use of alcohol is a must. But contrary to conventional wisdom, alcohol is responsible for considerably more health-related problems than even tobacco. An aspirin a day, coupled with eating red or green grapes, can more safely impart to our bodies all the beneficial effects ascribed to alcohol consumption. You have now completed the more technical portion of our book, and although we cannot award you with an MD in digestion, metabolism, or cardiology, you should be much better equipped to understand the more practical suggestions on eating for good health and weight loss that follow. The conversations with your own doctors and nutritionists or dietitians also should become more interesting. In summary, the basis of our concept is to have a positive influence on insulin and glucagon secretion through nutrition. This is achieved by eating a diet composed of natural, unrefined sugars, whole, unprocessed grains, vegetables, fruits, lean meats, fiber, and alcohol, if any, in moderation. You and your family deserve the best. Make the correct nutritional choice and join the Sugar Busters lifestyle. Chapter 10, Eating Patterns. All successful nutritional concepts involve the what, why, when, and how. In the preceding chapters, we have discussed the what, low sugar, and why, regulate insulin secretion, but now we need to address the when and how that will bring everything together into three full meals and an occasional snack. For many of you, success on the Sugar Busters lifestyle will require changing your current eating habits. More frequent, smaller meals stimulate less overall insulin secretion than one or two large meals, because long intervals between meals will alter the body's response to insulin secretion and increase fat storage. Therefore, we should strive to consume at least three balanced meals every day. Some studies indicate that eating as many as six small meals a day may provide even better control of the insulin response and even help in lowering cholesterol. While we have no problem with this eating pattern, we believe many people will find it impractical to fit this into their daily schedules. As discussed in Chapter 29, Myths, it is not necessary to count calories. In addition, it is not necessary to count sugar grams, fat grams, or protein grams. Not only is trying to do this frustrating, but the results are almost always unreliable. Your daily dietary intake should consist of high-fiber carbohydrates, lean meats as sources of protein, and primarily unsaturated fats. The Sugar Busters plan makes a point of limiting saturated fat. Portion size is very important. Don't overfill your plate. Your meat and vegetables should fit nicely in the center of the plate and not extend onto or over the rim. If you place proper servings on the plate, then the need to count grams is not necessary. Remember, once you have filled your plate appropriately, do not go back for seconds or thirds. This will prevent you from eating too much of an otherwise glycemically acceptable carbohydrate. In addition, because most cholesterol is manufactured at night when we are sleeping, a large meal of any type should not be eaten just before going to bed. You should try to finish your evening meal by approximately 8 p.m. Once dinner is over, the kitchen is closed. No midnight snacks. Following this advice also should reduce or even eliminate most of the indigestion or heartburn that can awaken us in the middle of the night. Appropriate snacks are encouraged, and most fruits, except watermelons, pineapple, raisins, and ripe bananas, which have a high glycemic index, are ideal for this occasion. Some individuals who experience frequent indigestion may benefit from eating fruit 30 minutes before or 2 hours after a meal. Fruit is digested primarily in the small intestine, and when eaten with other solids, its emptying from the stomach is delayed. This permits fermentation that produces indigestion, heartburn, and often gas, bloating. Most fruits contain the basic sugar fructose, which stimulates approximately one-third of the insulin secretion as an equal amount of sucrose, table sugar. Consequently, fruit alone as a snack is very beneficial, but in combination with other carbohydrates loses the advantage of lower insulin secretion that is achieved when eaten by itself. However, fruit juice may be consumed prior to a meal, such as breakfast, because fluid empties more quickly from the stomach than solids, especially if the juice is drunk first. In general, fluids should be drunk in small quantities during meals. Washing food down with lots of fluids can cause us to skip over the step of proper chewing, necessary to break food into smaller, more appropriate particles for better digestion. Excess fluid with meals also dilutes the digestive juices, which reduces their ability to thoroughly interact with food not only in the mouth but also in the stomach. This may result in partially digested food entering the small intestine, which can cause cramping. Fluids may be consumed between meals, but be careful because most sodas and even popular sports drinks are loaded with sugar, and some also contain large quantities of caffeine. Overconsumption of regular coffee and tea also can present the problem of too much caffeine. Caffeine makes the stomach produce gastric acid, which stimulates, not suppresses, appetite. Water and decaffeinated drinks, without added sugar, are preferable. You should make a conscientious effort to drink 6 to 8 glasses of water a day. This is beneficial to the proper function of many of your organs, especially the kidneys. Water consumed throughout the day will lessen your desire for food, thereby helping in weight control. Alcoholic beverages present a slightly different problem. Alcohol consumed with food, on a full stomach, is absorbed more slowly, which causes less insulin secretion and potentially less intoxicating effects. Therefore, if you choose to consume alcohol, do so on a full stomach and only in reasonable quantities. As a word of caution, mixers for drinks usually contain a lot of sugar, as does beer, which contains maltose, so neither is considered appropriate for a healthy diet. A dry, low-sugar red wine is the preferred alcoholic beverage. Some diets have recommended against mixing certain carbohydrates, such as pasta and rice, with protein. These combinations supposedly stimulate the secretion of competing digestive enzymes. We believe the problem is not so much the carbohydrate-protein combination as the type of carbohydrate that is consumed. For example, a meal of meatballs without added sugar and whole grain spaghetti is allowed. As discussed in Chapter 2, modest quantities of most unrefined or unprocessed carbohydrates are acceptable. Of course, starches in most forms, except sweet potatoes, which contain a considerable amount of fiber, are harmful and should not be eaten alone or in combination with other foods. Sorry, no potatoes with your meal, except for sweet potatoes. Shoppers, beware. Even the best intentions can go awry. Producers of foods have made it difficult for us to eat healthily. Most breakfast cereals, although advertised as being the best product for your health, are laced with either white sugar, brown sugar, molasses, corn syrup, or honey. In fact, it is difficult to purchase a pure natural grain cereal. They do exist, but to find them you must closely read the fine print on the side of the box. The same problem applies to bottled, canned, or other packaged foods, sauces, and dressings. Almost all of them have significant amounts of added sugar. Of course, fresh vegetables are your healthiest choice, followed by those that are quick frozen and those canned without added sugars. Whole grain breads, rolls, muffins, and other products are available in most large or specialty grocery stores. But you must be careful that our old nemesis sugar has not been added in one form or another. When we really begin to look at what we are eating, we quickly realize just how much sugar is present in almost everything we have been eating. To remind you where this has gotten us, refer to Figure 4 on your PDF companion. As you now begin to select foods and plan your meals and snacks, remember that sugar and high glycemic index carbohydrates are what you need to avoid. While sugar stimulates insulin secretion, which instructs our body to create and hold fat, protein stimulates glucagon secretion, which does just the opposite. Glucagon helps instruct our body to mobilize fat and convert it back to glucose, which reduces our fat stores and waistlines. A diet that reduces insulin secretion while enhancing glucagon secretion is the most beneficial. This method of eating reduces body fat and cholesterol, as well as the many health problems caused by both of them. Therefore, good dietary sources of protein are a must. All lean, trimmed meats, such as beef, fish, and fowl, are recommended. These should be grilled, baked, or broiled, since frying often involves saturated fats, trans fats, and/or a batter made with refined flour. Other excellent and healthy protein sources are eggs, cheese, and nuts. Remember, it is not necessarily the fat you eat, but the fat you create from sugar that is ruining your appearance and health. You should now be getting hungry for what you really like, but previously thought you should not eat. Light the grill, and let's see what's for dinner. Figures 9 and 10 on your PDF companion list a huge variety of acceptable foods, and Chapter 21 outlines a lifetime meal plan to help you on your way to a successful Sugar Busters lifestyle. Chapter 11, Acceptable Foods and Substitutes. The bottom line of any diet is to choose the proper things to eat. In this chapter, we hope to give you advice and examples to make these choices easy. In addition, we will briefly comment on caffeine, artificial sweeteners, and the spices that are part of our everyday diet. But first, let's look at some notable exceptions that probably will surprise you. Potatoes are for pigs and corn is for cattle. So say the French, and with good reason. These foods fatten these animals just as they fatten us. Potatoes, beets, and many other root vegetables are simply starch, a storage form of glucose. Once inside our digestive tracts, they are quickly converted to pure sugar. Their absorption is rapid, and the resulting insulin response is very significant. How many of us, for the sake of dieting, have not eaten a tender, juicy steak, but instead have opted for a baked potato? If we scooped out a baked potato and filled most of the skin with sugar, would you eat it? Certainly not. However, that is essentially what you are doing when you eat a baked potato, because it is quickly converted to sugar in your stomach. Hybrid corn that has large, fleshy kernels also causes a rapid insulin response. Maize, the original Indian corn, has smaller kernels and more fiber, and therefore has a much more moderate absorption and insulin release. Many Native Americans became overtly diabetic when they altered their diets and started eating the modern hybrid variety of corn, which has a greater sugar load. So to the list of foods to avoid, which already includes refined sugar and processed grain products, especially white bread and white rice, now add potatoes, beets, corn, and too many carrots. This may seem a little discouraging, but in fact, the list of recommended foods is quite extensive. To see what we can eat and enjoy, as well as what to avoid, refer to figures 9 and 10 on your PDF companion. In stores in America, it is extremely difficult to find many packaged or canned foods without one or more added sugars. Also, beware of sauces such as catsups and most barbecue sauces that are laced with added sugars. Most commercial salad dressings contain one or more forms of sugar as well. Last, remember that even with moderate and low glycemic index foods such as beans and sweet potatoes, you cannot expect to eat 3 or 4 portions of these foods at a meal and not gain or retain weight. It all adds up, so keep an eye on your total consumption. Chapter 12, Stocking and Unstocking the Pantry. Before you stock your pantry and refrigerator, you should first unstock the forbidden items. This is very important because it will eliminate the temptation near at hand, prevent your children or grandchildren from taking samples of fat-building foods, and make room for more wholesome things. How much inventory one keeps is a personal choice. Following are suggestions for those who have a little room in the pantry and cook at home from time to time. Unstocking the pantry. Get rid of the following: white potatoes, white bread, white rice, white flour, non-whole grain pastas, sugar-laden salad dressings and sauces, jellies and jams containing added sugars. All fruit products are okay in moderation. Sugar, syrup, candy bars, corn chips, potato chips, crackers or wafers containing enriched flours, canned goods with added sugars, fruit juices containing added sugars, sugar-sweetened soft drinks, teriyaki sauces. Stocking the pantry. Dry pantry. Stone-ground whole wheat flour. Stone-ground whole rye flour. Whole oatmeal or steel-cut oats. Packets of equal, sweet and low, fructose or stevia. Whole wheat pasta. No sugar added, pasta sauce. Brown rice. Dry black, kidney, navy, or pinto beans. Dry lentils and peas. White, apple cider and balsamic vinegar, preferably only 1 or 2% sugar. Sweet potatoes, yellow onions, garlic. Assorted nuts or bags of walnuts, almonds, pecans, or macadamia nuts. Olive oil and canola oil. Salad dressing with no sugar added. Natural peanut butter. Canned tuna, salmon, sardines. Canned mild green chilies. Salsa. Canned tomatoes. Tabasco sauce. Canned greens. Spinach, mixed greens, kale, collards. Beans, black, pinto, navy, kidney, other vegetables, green beans, peas, etc. Assorted spices of your choice, plus Worcestershire and soy sauces. Mustard, no sugar added mayonnaise, coffee, tea, green tea. Refrigerator, low-fat milk, low-fat cream cheese, cheese of your choice, eggs, low-fat sour cream, no sugar added yogurt, butter, romaine lettuce, fresh vegetables of your choice. Freezer, Canadian bacon, smoked ham hocks, frozen greens, spinach, kale, and other vegetables, green beans, peas, broccoli, cauliflower. No sugar added ice cream, meat, poultry, or fish. Fruits, apples, oranges, peaches, pears, plums, cantaloupe, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, green bananas, tomatoes, blackberries. Chapter 13, Why Sugar Busters Works for Diabetics. Everyone should pay attention to this chapter, not just those individuals with diabetes. We all have friends or relatives with diabetes. After you finish this book, and particularly this chapter, you will be able to give those diabetics some intriguing advice that can help them eat in a way that will reduce their blood sugar levels and most likely their need for insulin or oral medication. The American Diabetes Association and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has recognized that a large number of people in the United States have early symptoms of diabetes and that, left untreated, most of these people will go on to develop diabetes within 10 years. These organizations are now using the term pre-diabetes to describe blood sugar levels that are higher than normal but not yet indicative of full-blown diabetes. They are also urging that people be screened for the presence of this condition. The two main categories of diabetes are insulin-dependent, or type 1, diabetes, and non-insulin-dependent, or type 2, diabetes. Although many type 2 diabetics ultimately become dependent on orally administered medication or injections of insulin to control their blood sugars. Another less common type of diabetes occurs during pregnancy. This is referred to as gestational diabetes, which we will discuss later in this chapter. Over 90% of all patients with diabetes have type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetics generally acquire the disease younger, are thinner, and require insulin injections. Type 2 diabetics have historically been older, over 40 at the time of onset, obese, and initially could be treated with diet and exercise or diet and oral medications. However, the recent surge in type 2 diabetes in children is changing the way we think about this form of the disease. Diet still is the most important treatment for all types of diabetes, and Sugar Busters describes a way of eating that is particularly effective for all types of diabetes. When we wrote this book, we knew that the way of eating we described had to be helpful for diabetics. But the favorable responses from those diabetics who have followed the Sugar Busters lifestyle exceeded our expectations. Many borderline type 2 diabetics have seen their blood glucose drop back to within the normal range of 90 to 110 milligrams per deciliter. We have seen many type 2 diabetics who require insulin improve to a point where injections are no longer needed. The following is an example that typifies what this way of eating can do for a borderline diabetic. Joe Canizero, an entrepreneur and prominent New Orleans developer, said, "In 1997, I had my annual physical, and upon completion of all the usual tests, my doctor said, 'Joe, what the heck have you been doing?' 'I don't know, Doc. What's wrong with me?' The doctor said, 'Nothing. I've been telling you for 6 years that you are a borderline diabetic, but this time your blood sugar is normal.' I said, 'Well, Doc, I've been trying a new way of eating I read about in a book called Sugar Busters.' We checked with Joe in late 2002 to see how he was doing. He said, 'My blood sugar is still normal. I am not a borderline diabetic anymore.'" A good example of success by a type 2 diabetic who required oral medication for his diabetes is Dr. John Crisp, Dean of the College of Engineering at the University of New Orleans. Dr. Crisp was given a copy of Sugar Busters by the chancellor of the university, Dr. Gregory O'Brien, who was concerned about John's health. After following the way of eating recommended in Sugar Busters, Dr. Crisp found that he no longer needed any pills and that his quality of life had improved dramatically. Let's now talk about the experience of Jerry Crowder, a retired executive from Houston, Texas. Jerry, 72 years old, was overweight and a full-fledged diabetic. Jerry was given a copy of our manuscript a month before the original Sugar Busters was published because we knew he was diabetic and believed that the Sugar Busters lifestyle would be beneficial for him. 2 months later, one of our authors saw Jerry and asked him, "How are you doing?" Jerry replied that he had lost 30 pounds, but what he really liked about our plan was that he was off insulin. He had started his injections with 28 units of Humulin N every morning for the past 2.5 years, but his doctor said he no longer needed it. He said his doctor told him, "Jerry, your blood glucose was 240 when we started you on the insulin injections, but now it is only 128. You are only a borderline diabetic, and you no longer need these injections." Jerry told our author that he could even have a glass or two of wine in the evening without excessively elevating his blood sugar. These are success stories. What does this mean for Jerry and all those like Joe and John and Jerry who are able to achieve similar results? If diabetics, most of whom, if not all, are insulin resistant, can keep their blood sugar near normal by eating in a way that requires very little insulin secretion, they will dramatically reduce the process that causes deterioration of their vision, kidneys, nerves, and circulatory system. Why is this diet so effective for diabetics? Either a diabetic's pancreas does not manufacture the correct amount of insulin, or his or her body does not respond to the insulin in an efficient manner. Most often, the culprit is insulin resistance. Insulin resistance means that one's body needs more insulin to maintain its blood sugar in a normal range than does the body of a non-diabetic person who has consumed exactly the same meal. Diabetics following the Sugar Busters lifestyle will be less likely to be out of control than they would be on most other diabetic diets that do not differentiate, as we do, the good carbohydrates from the high glycemic, insulin-demanding carbohydrates. Diabetics frequently have damage to their kidneys, eyes, nerves, and cardiovascular system. Diminished circulation and nerve damage, neuropathy, may ultimately cause so much damage to the extremities that they have to be amputated. Injections of insulin, although designed to control elevated glucose in a type 2 diabetic, often are inefficient. Injected insulin is delivered at predetermined rates that often do not exactly coincide with the requirement created by the consumption of differing amounts of various foods. A properly functioning pancreas in a body that utilizes insulin normally will secrete insulin into the bloodstream in precisely the required amounts at exactly the right time. This precision is not yet achievable with devices that mechanically deliver insulin. So a diabetic should not eat in a fashion that creates a big demand for insulin. The most severe damage occurs most frequently in diabetics whose blood sugar levels remain the most out of balance. A diet low in refined sugar, white potatoes, and processed grain products does not cause gross elevation in blood sugars in the first place, so there is not as much exposure to organ damage. We believe early intervention with a low-glycemic, high-fiber diet can prevent or significantly postpone the onset of this disease. If the diet is coupled with exercise, the chance of developing diabetes drops even more. For additional information relative to the prevention of diabetes, refer to Chapter 5. Diabetes is a very common disease. Every year, more and more cases of diabetes are diagnosed, and the percentage of the population having diabetes continues to increase. The highest rate of increase in the last decade has been in our children. Recall Chapter 6. Diabetes has been found to be more prevalent in Afro-Americans, Native Americans, and Hispanics than in Caucasians. The rate of diagnosis for those who already have diabetes in these ethnic groups is also thought to lag behind the rest of the population. If you are in one of these groups, you should be very mindful of any risk factors for or early indicators of diabetes. These include being overweight or obese, having developed gestational diabetes during pregnancy, go back and ask your doctor, having a family history of diabetes, having elevated blood sugar, or having had an impaired glucose tolerance test. The diabetes epidemic is a worldwide phenomenon. The common usage of refined sugars and now highly refined grain products and even French fries is a worldwide phenomenon. Over 100 million people in all countries have diabetes, and that number is estimated to grow to 250 million by 2015. The occurrence of diabetes increases with age and also with obesity for all groups. See Figure 11 on your PDF companion. The Pima Indians in the southwestern United States have the highest incidence of diabetes in the world. When large kernel hybridized corn was substituted for the traditional small kernel fibrous ears of corn, the rate of diabetes among the Pimas soared to 50%. The glycemic index of many of the Pima Indians' traditional foods was low compared to that of the hybridized corn and highly refined carbohydrates, and their bodies could not efficiently handle the increased sugar load. According to experts at a recent meeting of the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, as many as 50% of the people with undetected diabetes already have complications such as nerve damage, eye, kidney disease, or heart disease by the time the diabetes is detected. Early screening is indeed wise. We do not recommend that a diabetic eat any foods with a high glycemic load. While it is true that all carbohydrates are converted to glucose in our bodies, it just does not make sense for diabetics to put themselves at risk of unbalancing their blood sugar by consumption of foods that cause a rush of sugar into the bloodstream, such as candy and cake. And we do not recommend these foods for non-diabetics either, because they demand a large release of insulin from the pancreas and can result in weight gain. In some individuals, frequent consumption of such foods can eventually exhaust the pancreas, which will result in diabetes. Relative to exercise, a 10-year Harvard University study of nearly 40,000 men found that those who watched the most TV, over 40 hours a week, had three times the risk of developing diabetes as the men who watched the least amount of TV. The researchers reported that the avid TV watchers tended to exercise less and ate more red or processed meat, snacks, refined grains, and sweets. They also ate fewer fruits and vegetables and fewer whole grains. Again, the sugar busters lifestyle can help move you out of harm's way. A strong word of caution. If you are currently taking insulin or other diabetic medication and start the sugar busters way of eating, consult your doctor because you will probably require less than your current dose of medication. It is very likely that you will not need as much insulin, and if you are a type 2 diabetic who closely follows this diet, quite possibly none at all. What about type 1 diabetics, whose bodies do not manufacture much insulin? Does this diet work for them? Yes, it does help. By not eating meals rich in refined or processed carbohydrates, sugars, which create a large requirement for insulin, type 1 diabetics will not need as much insulin to keep their blood glucose in a normal range. A type 1 diabetic will always require some amount of insulin. However, eating in this fashion promotes lower insulin requirements and is certainly healthier. Remember, our bodies did not evolve on diets that created a great need for high insulin levels, and the damage to our organs and circulatory system is most pronounced when our blood sugar is the most out of balance. We previously mentioned gestational diabetes. Although gestational diabetes is temporary, it does indicate a strong tendency for the mother to be susceptible to type 2 diabetes. Over time, 50% to 70% of gestational diabetics develop type 2 diabetes. Those who are obese before or after pregnancy develop it at higher rates. Importantly, untreated gestational diabetes can have a major impact on the mother and, unfortunately, the unborn child, who will also stand a higher chance of becoming diabetic later in life. All pregnant women should be screened for gestational diabetes between the 24th and 28th weeks of pregnancy. A low-glycemic diet full of fruits and appropriate vegetables will help prevent pregnant women from gaining excess weight and developing gestational diabetes. As illustrated in Figure 4 on your PDF companion, just 1,500 years ago, refined sugar did not exist, and neither did the hybridized, plump, and juicy vegetables and grain products that have a much lower fiber content and a much higher glycemic index.